of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode. And today, Adam from Talking Superman and I are going to be covering Superman number 5. Welcome back to the show, Adam. Always great to have you.
Thanks for having me. Always great to be here.
Yeah, this may have been my favorite issue of Superman to date. But we'll get into that in a second. Let me give the creative team. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis. We have pencils from Ivan Reis. We have a couple guys on inks, as we've seen. That's been kind of the standard on Superman. Joe Prado handles the inks from pages 1 through 6 and 23 through 24. And then we have Eau Claire Albert from 7 through 22. Alex Sinclair on colors, Josh Reed on letters. We've got the regular cover from Reese, Prado, and Sinclair, and then a variant cover from Adam Hughes. This was a really fun issue, I thought. It had a lot visually, and the story. I feel like we're right on the verge of getting our answers about Rogel Czar. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's going to be we were about to until, got a little interference. So yeah. Probably maybe 2 issues until we get some answers. Yeah. I don't think next one.
Yeah, I think next one might be a big 3-way brawl or 2-way brawl a lot of action coming up in the next one. So it's been interesting because this is the Superman title, and it's probably had – it seems to be the more cosmic, the more action-oriented, and action's been, a little more on the character side. So it's interesting, as opposed to before Bendis came on, the action title was the one that had – more action, more of the superheroics with Dan Jurgens doing that title. And with Tomasi and Gleason over on the Superman title, it seemed a little more character driven. It's where we had Lois show up a lot more. John Kent show up a lot more. Bendis has kind of flipped it. I wonder if he did that consciously. Like, I wonder what went behind the choice of this is the story I'm going to tell in Superman and this is the story I'm going to tell in action.
Yeah. My thought was that he's less taking the word action literally as a title and more saying action is the one that's kind of getting back to the roots and going back to, classic action.
Yeah, I kind of wondered that myself, being that it's been around for, 1,000+ issues now. It is the one where, we first saw the Daily Planet, we first met, these characters. So yeah, it's definitely possible. Well, let's go ahead and dive into the issue, and then we'll talk about our thoughts on it. And then I want to also talk a little bit, even though this is Superman focused, I want to talk about a theory that one of our listeners has about who Red Cloud might be. And I know she's a character in Action Comics, but he sent me another text last night after reading this issue, I assume. So I think it's a good time to bring it up. So we'll do that at the end as well. So this issue starts off.
All right.
And we are seeing Superman and the House of El. I mean, not only do we see Superman wearing the colors, Jonathan wearing the colors, we've got Lois behind him in her Superwoman costume, like from All-Star Superman or the Superwoman comic, the first issue anyway, before she was unceremoniously taken care of. But what else is interesting is we see Jimmy there, like all buffed up. I think that's supposed to be Cat Grant. We've got Batman, Green Lantern, and Flash in the background, and we've got Kellex, and Zod is saying the House of El, pointing to them. He's pointing to himself saying House of Zod, and then turns and says the House of Kandor, and we see a lot of the Kandorians stand there, and then all of a sudden we pan out, and it's New Krypton. And so, assuming this is the planet that we saw in the Action Comics? Yeah, it was at the Action Comics run. Yeah, go ahead.
I actually had best read the recent Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps book, and this is the planet from that book that Zod was recently in.
It was Hal. We saw Zod go to the planet in action, and then in Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, we saw that he had basically the inhabitants were worshiping them, and they were establishing a new Krypton.
Oh, okay.
I
forgot that it was in action then.
I think that we saw them go there in action in the crossover that had Booster Gold when they were traveling around. Remember? Okay. And they were there. They, Superman and Booster Gold went to the planet in the future, and this city was built. And at the same time, and Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, we were seeing the beginnings of that. I think is that it worked out. So, but anyway, we're here at that city. And so it's like, wait, you know, a lot of questions here. Why do we see Lois having superpowers or in this costume? And the city looks even more advanced than the last time we saw it in Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. And Zod's talking about, they can on the planet Ja'Kul. That's what it's called. J-A-K-U-U-L. They're continuing to establish the new Krypton and bathing in the godlike power granted by the yellow sun. And it doesn't really seem that Zod-like. Zod's always kind of been bent on revenge for the, you know, over the House of El for being sent to the Phantom Zone. But I don't know. Maybe now he's putting quote unquote Krypton first and looking to reestablish and saying, hey, we can help reshape the galaxy for a better tomorrow. And Ursa's like, you want us to marry the House of El? I mean, even she's surprised, right? And Zod's response is, well, it's the only way. I come to see that now. I must put all our egos and differences aside. Again, that doesn't sound very Zod-like to me. Zod is not about putting his ego aside. But anyway, he goes on to say, we've been given an enormous opportunity, El, Zod, and Kandor, and we need a united Krypton. So he turns to Superman and says, Kal-El, can you do it? Can you look past our ideological divide and help us find a new future for Krypton? And Superman doesn't respond. And he says, Kal-El, take it. Take the second chance that your father brought us, right? He says, please, for Krypton, for the future. And as he says that, for the future, there's a shadow that falls over him. And we see all of a sudden this invading force. And it's hard to tell exactly what they are. Perhaps they're meant to be the Kryptonians from the Phantom Zone. But I'm just not sure. But immediately the Kryptonians are attacked on New Krypton. Blood is shed. And we see bodies strewn about. And out of that wreckage comes Rogol Zar. And he says, Zod? And then Zod wakes up and we find out it's all been a dream. They're still attempting to build new Krypton on Ja'Kul. And Ursa asks if it's the vision again. And Zod says, yes, a new Krypton. And Ursa say, you got to stop drinking those Ja'Kul spirits, man. It's doing something to you. And he's like, it does. It gives me hope. And Ursa's like, what's happened to you? And he's not used to being questioned. And meanwhile, the sun comes in and their sun comes in and says, they're saying the Earth. And he's like, I don't want to hear about the Earth right now. He's like, but they're saying the Earth is missing. And then we turn the page and the scene shifts to the Phantom Zone. Superman is pretty beat up at this point. Costume ripped in many places. The denizens of the Phantom Zone have him surrounded. And Rogol Zar says, there he is, the last son of Krypton. And Jaxor wonders if it's too much to ask to have the killing blow. And Rogol Zar says, yes, very much so. And Jaxor's response is, yeah, I figured. And so Rogol Zar once again challenges Superman to rise. And not only does Superman rise, he flies off. And Jaxor says, you know, if I didn't know him by reputation, I'd think that was a very cowardly move. And Zar seems a bit disappointed and says, yeah, for all the good it'll do him. You know, he's trapped in here with us and he'll come to me eventually. And again, the question that we've been asking, the question that Jaxor has been asking, the question that Superman's been asking, Jaxor says, who are you? And he says, let's see if I'm not the expediter of your dreams, Jaxor. And Jaxor's response is, well, I hope so, because as exciting as it is in here, I can only imagine what it'd be like if we're able to bust out and what it would be like to be free in the rest of the universe. Meanwhile, back in the former location of Earth, Adam Strange is there. He's calling in. I was thinking about this every time I've read it. Like, who exactly is he calling? Is he calling the Green Lantern Corps, maybe? He's like, yeah, so my name's Adam Strange. I like to report a missing planet, the Earth. Well, that's what they call it on Earth, is the Earth. I don't know what the galaxy, you know, calls it, whatever. He's like, yeah, I'm a planet hopping adventurer, and the Earth has been, well, they don't seem to believe him, because he's like, well, if you'd like to join me where the Earth used to be, we can, and then all of a sudden Zod shows up there. It says, my name is Zod. Apparently Adam Strange had never met him before, which I suppose is possible. It surprised me a little, being that Adam Strange is such a spacefaring adventurer. Obviously he's heard of him because he says Zod of the Kryptonian Zods. And Zod wants to know where Earth is. And Adam Strange is like, well, this is really strange. And my name is actually, and then before he can finish, Zod spots something in the distance, a glow, and says, what is that? As they approach it, they see it, that it's the Earth, but it's still very relatively small. It's about maybe a little smaller than a basketball. And Adam Strange has a funny reaction. He's like, shrunken Earth. And then the Adam, right? And so immediately tries to call Adam. He's like, this is Adam Strange calling on the Justice League server 3. Can you hear me? And as he makes that call, he sees the Earth start to grow. And it's growing at a very fast rate. And Adam's like, right where we, uh-oh. And it starts growing so quickly that Zod and Adam Strange are kind of sucked down into it. One into the, into Metropolis. Adam Strange ends up in Metropolis and Zod ends up in the Persian Gulf. So, once the Earth has returned to a normal size, Adam Strange again tries to contact the Atom. We get a peek inside Star Labs where we see that, Killer Frost, Livewire, Flash and the Atom are recovering, I guess, from the boom tube journey of the shrunken Earth through the boom tube to return to its normal place. But Adam Strange calling out Ray Palmer, Adam, wakes him up. And he's like, Adam, don't tell me that Earth ended up near Ron. And he's like, did you just shrink the entire planet? And before he can answer, he's like, hold on, please. And Zod has already tracked down Adam. And so Zod then demands to have the Phantom Zone projector used on him. You know, and this is the same Phantom Zone projector that Flash had run around the Earth with. And it's real interesting. So it's not explained at all. Like, how did Zod know that's where the Phantom projector was? Did he, I guess it's possible he scanned the Earth when it was still really small and saw where it was. But it's just really interesting because he was nowhere near Star Labs Metropolis. He was Persian Gulf. But as soon as the Earth has returned to its normal size, he's already there. So again, he demands to have the Phantom Zone projector used on it. Adam picks it up, triggers it, and maybe he should have asked this question first before he used it. That was the right thing to do, right? That had to be the right thing to do. Wait, are we back to full size? Meanwhile, back in the Phantom Zone, we see Rogol Zar sitting by a fire and Kal-El off in the distance thinking about kind of the choices he's made and the life he's led as Superman. You know, he's like, you know, I was given my path. I didn't choose it for myself. I was told what my path was going to be, rocketed to Earth, and I'm okay with all of it. I am. It's been an honor to fly this path, even on days where living up to the ideal of Superman has been so overwhelming that I can barely, and he doesn't finish the thought, which is interesting, right? We always think of Superman being above that kind of angst, right? And being able to bear the mantle of Superman almost with ease most of the time. But here he's thinking about it as really a burden. And we can see him getting angrier and angrier as we think this. And I mean, we talk a lot about Kevin Maguire's facial expressions and how oftentimes he'll zoom in on faces and give us progression in thought. And it allows us to kind of get inside the character's head and understand what the character's feeling without any dialogue at all. Yvonne Reese is doing that same thing here. And Bendis's scripting is almost not necessary. We can almost understand what Superman's thinking and feeling, or we can kind of guess at it, you know, pretty educated guess, without even having the dialogue. But what he is thinking about is days like today, when he feels like he's trapped in hell with the devil, and he keeps telling himself that he couldn't find a way to kill this monster, even if he wanted to, right? He hasn't been able to overcome Rogol Zar's power. But if he could, right? If he could make the entire dimension cease to exist, right, with all the evil beings in it, maybe that's what he should be doing, right? Maybe that would help resolve these impossible situations that he finds himself in where, you know, he can't find the way out. He can't find the right answer. And even when he does resolve that battle, the war continues because he allows these beings to keep living, right? And so he thinks about taking it all the way is how he puts it, right? This being murdered Kandor and Krypton. He killed Superman's people. And maybe if he used his power to do what no one else can. And as he's thinking this and getting more and more angry, he hears a voice saying Clark. And as he turns, he sees a vision of Ma and Pa Kent. And immediately his anger melts away. And Ma and Pa say, if tests were easy, they wouldn't be tests. And you can tell he immediately feels kind of guilty and ashamed. And he's thinking, sorry, Pa. The Earth is safe and that's what matters. And as for the honeypot trap, Rogolzar and Jaxor have given him, have placed him where he's found himself. You know, the monster and all his secrets that Clark still doesn't know and we still don't know. And I love this. He thinks, what would Lois do? Right? As heroic as Superman is, he has his moments of doubt. And when he does, he's thinking about, you know, the person that matters most to him in the world. And a character that Brian Michael Bendis considers the most important character in the DC universe, the most heroic. So, you know, WWLD, man, what would Lois do? And so what he thinks is Lois would use it, right? He'd turn this trap on Rogolzar, kind of turn the tables on him. And so Superman goes to confront Rogolzar, and he's really looking for answers, right? He's not looking to confront him physically again. He wants to understand why. And so he shows up behind Rogolzar and says, hey, question, who destroyed your home planet? Was it a Kryptonian? Is that what this is about? And Rogolzar is content to kind of play around with Superman a little, doesn't give him any straight answers, just sits there and continues eating. And he says, let's not diminish each other, right? I know in your soul, there's nothing you can say or do to stop me from completing my task. I know that you know that. And, you know, you, your entire adopted planet, they're all going down. And then after I've cleansed this place, this phantom zone of Kryptonian filth, so we know he's going to betray the Kryptonians there. We knew that all along, despite what Jaxar and the rest might think. He says, then I'll hunt down whatever half-breed offspring you've spread across the galaxy. And at that moment is where Superman gets it. The light bulb goes on. He says, there it is. He says, now I see it. And I came here to tell you, you're never leaving the Phantom Zone. You and your mysteries, you, Jaxar, and the other Kryptonians. I came here to tell you that you are never leaving the Phantom Zone. You and Jaxar and the other Kryptonians, you're going to be here forever. But now I see it. And Zar says, see what? And we see Superman with a bit of a smile on his face. So again, it seems like he's realized what the truth behind Rogolzar really is. And Rogolzar says, you know, if I was faced with the destruction of my race and my system of belief, I'd want nothing more than to kill that person. Like murderous rage, I'd be in a murderous rage. I'd know bloodlust and the likes of which no mortal could ever come back from. And Krypton, Kandor, you still can't find it in you to kill me. And if that's the case, if I can do all that and you're not going to kill me, then I know you'll never. And then we see a giant explosion and we get a voice off panel saying, you're right, creature. Kal-El is above revenge. But I, and then we turn to the last page and it's a full page of Zod looking extremely pissed off. I am Zod, is what he says. So I love that Superman seems to have figured out the mystery. Now we just need our chance to figure out what the answer is. And based on the context of the story, when Superman says, now I see it, it may give us some clues. So, but I usually give my thoughts on the issue first, but I'm going to give Adam the chance to go first this time. And we'll see if he thinks the origins of Rogolzar may be the same that I suspect.
Well, I think we did have the same idea that Superman had the realization after Rogel mentioned finding his children. So are we supposed to suspect that a Kryptonian killed Rogel's kids?
That's a possibility. That's not what I was thinking.
Okay, what were you thinking?
So, you know, he says, I'll hunt down whatever half-breed offspring you have sired across this galaxy. So my thought was perhaps Rogel Zar himself is a half-breed. Perhaps he's like a bastard son of some Kryptonian. And so his resentment, you know, everybody's got daddy issues. So his resentment might be that, you know, some Kryptonian sired him on, you know, whatever alien race his mother was, and then abandoned him to go back and live the high life on Krypton, you know, advanced civilization. And he was left out there to, you know, scrape along, perhaps. You know, maybe he lived in poverty. Maybe his world was, you know, not a safe place, and it was more of a struggle to survive. So that was my thinking. He's out, you know, trying to get revenge for a childhood he feels like he didn't deserve. And the other thing I thought was with him talking about, like, I've done all this. I've killed Krypton. I've destroyed Kandor. You still can't bring yourself, you know, to destroy me. It may be on some level, Rogel Zar has – he's a bit self-destructive, right? There's some self-hate there. And he might be fine either way, whether he wipes out all of Kryptonians to have his revenge or if he can finally achieve his death wish, because – he hasn't been a happy being. He hasn't had a happy childhood. He's ready for some peace in the oblivion of death, you know? And he's like, man, I've done all this just hoping that somebody could find a way to destroy me, you know, so I didn't have to live with the pain of being rejected by a father or whatever. And I don't know. I mean, it's wild speculation. Who knows at this point?
That's definitely a more interesting theory, I will say. I'm wondering, as you're saying that, I was noticing, you know, does that have something to do with why he put the a Kryptonian cape around his neck? Even if he does hate Kryptonians, he still feels like that's part of his heritage.
Yeah, definitely. What did you think about the dream sequence in the beginning? Were you like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah, well... So my only question about that, well, first of all, I thought it was interesting. It's an interesting word to use, right, when he says, it shows me hope. You know, you don't just throw around that word willy-nilly in a Superman book. So I was wondering what he was trying to say about that. And then, the one question I had was, how does he know about Rogel if he saw him in his dream?
Yeah, that is a good question. I don't know. But you're right about the hope thing, because, right, I mean, the House of L, the S, that's actually the symbol for hope on Krypton. So, yeah, it's interesting. Right. At that point, Rogel Zar's, I mean, Zod is not dreaming anymore. He's awake, you know, and he's like,
right.
I mean, is he starting to turn, or was he starting to soften maybe a little bit and think, you know, if I really want what's best for Krypton? I mean, because you always think that dreams have somewhat to do with subconscious. So maybe on some level, he does wish to try to bring Krypton back. So in that way, he's almost willing to align himself more or start to have some more belief in the beliefs of the House of El, which is a much more kind of positive faction of Krypton as opposed to Zod's house, which is much more militaristic. So... there's that whole thing. But yeah, how does he know about Rogel Zar? And again, this goes back to the kind of the messiness when you retcon something in to a continuity Bendis is. Because Zod has been in the Phantom Zone for a long time, you know, escaped recently. When did he have time to find out about Zar? And then Zar, for his, you know, for his part, Krypton was destroyed a long time ago, and he's been traveling around the galaxy all this time. And, you know, we talked about this when we covered Man of Steel. He only just discovered, you know, that Superman existed. Did he not know about the Phantom Zone before? It just, it doesn't quite make sense if he's, you know, been traveling around for, you know, 50 years or, you know, however long. It seems like he would have found out those things a little sooner. And if it was really his mission to wipe out all of Kryptonians, he would have done it a long time ago, right? Like, if that's his motivation, once he destroyed Krypton, wouldn't he start immediately looking around for survivors? I got to think the Phantom Zone was a pretty well-known thing, right? Like, people know, hey, the Phantom Zone exists.
Yeah, if he knew about Jack Sayre, so he must have known how he was sentenced.
Yeah, exactly. So again, it's kind of the messiness when you retcon stuff like this. But yeah, I was pretty confused by the dream thing too. I was like, wait a second. So wait, did when the Earth got sent to wherever it got sent, did it get sent someplace close to the planet where New Krypton is forming? And how is it like? I mean, they've really, Zod and his followers have really built New Krypton up pretty quick. But wait, why was Superman there? He got left behind in the Phantom Zone. And what's up with Lois in the costume? And then Rogol Zaar shows up. And as soon as Rogol Zaar showed up, that was when I was like, yeah, this must be some kind of a dream or vision or a glimpse into the future or something. So, but you do wonder, like, so where are these dreams coming from? You know, beyond how did Zod find out about Rogol Zaar? Like, so what is exactly the motivation or what's going on with Zod that he's having these dreams? And does he know about Kandor's destruction?
Good question. I get who would have told him? Probably not, right?
Yeah, that's what I would think. So, I mean, that would make sense that he would think that, yeah, Kandor can still be, you know, be part of this new Krypton as well. But is is it a vision of a possible future too? Because again, when he says House of El, we don't just see Superman, Lois, and John. We see other beings from Earth. So it may be that he's considering all the beings of Earth to be the House of El because they're under Superman's protection. And again, at this point, I was like, wait, so did Earth get like jacked up? And so Zod is asking or letting them know, hey, you can come be part of New Krypton. All Earthlings are welcome. Yeah. It's interesting. And is it just a dream or is it a glimpse of a possible future? Is it a different part of the multiverse? There's a lot. And knowing Bendis, we won't ever come back to the dream sequence and it'll all just be, hey, I thought this would be a cool thing to get Zod riled up.
Yeah. That is good theory, though, that it might be a glimpse of the future. That would be a pretty cool payoff if we see this scene play out, you know, 30 issues later.
Yeah, and it might just be...
That's what I'm hoping for, at least.
It might just be, you know, Bendis wants a chance to tell his new Krypton story like we've seen in the past. Those are always really fun stories, too, but the problem I have with them, and it's a, you know, I know I'm nitpicking here, but it's like... They usually come up with a really cool story. The beginning and the middle is really great, but then the endings tend to be a little less impactful because as fun as it is to tell this story of New Krypton and you know, at different times Superman's decided to be a part of the civilization, other times not, but then you eventually have to get it all back to the status quo and building it up and seeing what it becomes is always fun, but it's always messy when you have, okay, now we have to take it all apart because we got to bring Superman back to Earth and have him back in Metropolis. And then it's like, so you've either got to kill the Kryptonian civilization all over again or destroy it or come up with some, oh, it got teleported away or got put in a different multiverse. So yeah, that's the problem with them, you know? So I almost would like Bendis to be able to just tell his stories outside of continuity, which we've talked about before, you know, like if he wanted to just tell Superman stories, you know, without him being married or whatever, you almost wish they'd just given him a book where do whatever you want. It doesn't tie into to the main DCU, but I'm sure.
I guess I have mixed feelings about it because I do believe that you do have to take these big changes and big risks in main continuity. And I always respect that when I think it kind of enriches the history of the characters, but I can't argue. You're right that when you do that, it's always going to be awkward sweeping it away at the end.
Yeah, 100%. What did you think about the scene where Superman flew away? Jack Sayre even remarks, if I didn't know better, I'd say he was a coward.
I didn't think too much of it, honestly. But it is kind of nice that it's not a punch away problem. I think that the overall idea behind this issue, it goes back to the moment with Livewire when he's talking about, they can't get better unless they want to be better. And now Superman is kind of seeing, well, sometimes Rogel is the ultimate example of, I don't want to have a conversation about it, right? So he's kind of learning, I have to fly away and step back, and I have to be the one to figure them out first, even if they aren't going to give me any leeway at first.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. Superman's never been a punch first, ask questions later kind of guy. He always prefers the more peaceful solution. So I thought this was completely in character. You know, I feel like I don't even know that he necessarily would have engaged with Rogel Zar and the rest of the prisoners of the Phantom Zone if he didn't have to. You know, he didn't go out looking for trouble. His motivation was, I need to save Earth. Earth's not going to survive if it stays in the Phantom Zone for very long. It's basically ripping itself to pieces. And he didn't go out looking for the fight. It wasn't until he sensed the army of Rogel Zar approaching that he went out to stop them from invading Earth and destroying Earth. And then when they were able to get into Earth's atmosphere, he did everything he could to get them off planet so that Adam's plan could work. You know, let's shrink Earth down, put it through a boom tube, get it back to home base. And now that Earth is gone and safe, again, he understands his limitations in the Phantom Zone. It's been a long time since he's been exposed to the radiation of a yellow sun to kind of power up. So brains before brawn. And not only that, he's still looking for the answer of why. Like, why did you do this, Rogel Zar? But one thing I did find interesting in that sequence is when, right at the beginning, Superman's, you know, bleeding and his costume's ripped and he's kind of staggering to his feet, and Rogel Zar says, "Rise, Superman." And there's like an emphasis, and super is like the super logo that you see in Superman, but the man is just like regular type. So it's almost like Rogel Zar's version of sarcasm there, maybe. He wants to, remind Superman that, yeah, you're not really that super and you are just a man. So, but I didn't have a problem with them flying away at all. And I thought that the internal struggle that Superman went through, you know, I talked about it already, the incredible art, the sequence by Yvonne Reese. And again, I thought you can completely understand what he's going through and seeing. And if you took out all the dialogue boxes from that entire sequence, and the next page when Ma and Pa can't show up, I think you still would know exactly what he was doing. You know, getting angry about the situation he's in, getting angry about Rogel Zar, thinking, you know what, I finally, for once, am going to take it all the way, to use his terminology. And then remembering Ma and Pa Kent, you know, seeing a vision of them and feeling the shame of, how could I even consider that? So, powerful storytelling from Bendis. And that might be why I consider this my favorite issue of Superman so far. I feel like this feels more like who Superman is to me than any Bendis issue that I've read so far.
So, yeah. Without even taking into account, because you said earlier, you know, that you would think Superman would be above this anger. Do you think that this anger is justified in this issue?
I don't know that I would say it was justified. And it's not that we haven't seen Superman struggle with some, you know, with some doubt before in the past.
Right.
But I just feel like what Bendis is doing in his Superman story is he's showing us a more emotional Superman than maybe we're used to seeing. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing, because he's doing it in a way that feels very realistic. You know, from things, I keep going back to like the first issue of Man of Steel, when he was cycling through all the different sounds of Metropolis, and he heard that girl playing that song. And it impacted him and reminded him like why I do what I do, and I don't mean to eavesdrop. And but you could see it was an emotional response. And I think it's probably why Bendis is considered such a great writer, to take a character like Superman, who's been around for, you know, 80 years, and to be able to still bring something new to him it's interesting, right? And it's a reason to pick up the book. And it's probably a reason why a lot of Bendis fans I've seen that have said, you know, I've never read Superman before, never even read DC before, but I picked it up because, you know, it's you, and I'm loving the title. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still things that I don't like that he's doing, you know, specifically the Lois Clark relationship, but I understand why he's doing it. But I mean, this kind of storytelling, it's going to be tough not to eventually get on board, because I thought, like, pacing wise, this issue was done really well. The emotionality of the issue, and he's always got two or three character beats in there that are, you know, that are humorous. And yeah, maybe the most important part is we see that Superman does seem to understand Rogozar now. Like, he does have a clue, or at least a pretty good idea of why Zar has been doing what he's doing. And again, brains over brawn, I imagine that Superman will find a way to exploit whatever that is. And it may be that he defeats Rogozar on kind of like a spiritual level, if you know what I mean. Like, he may find a way to use whatever information that he knows about Rogozar's beginnings to break Rogozar's resolve. Because we've seen they're pretty evenly matched. Maybe Rogozar slightly, without his axe, is about equal to Superman, maybe slightly stronger. But again, Superman is in the Phantom Zone, and his power is going to continue to diminish. But all that gets completely thrown out the door when we see Zod show up, who is still fully powered. And that's an incredible image as well, when Zod comes in like a, you know, bolt from above with a giant explosion. And Zod's not going to have – he says himself, you know, Kal-El may have issues with revenge, but I don't, because I'm Zod. So I expect a giant battle next issue where Zar may be saved by Superman. And what's that going to do to him, right? And again, if we go back to the Death Wish thing, Zar may be happy to have Zod be there to destroy him. So yeah, a pretty good cliffhanger, and I'm really excited for the next issue for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, if I could talk about Zod for a minute too, because we got to mention more Zod, I think, is that I'm more interested. Like, I think Rebirth has been very good to Zod, right? I love that we're seeing, you know, revenge is at its core always, but I'm more interested in Zod, like how we saw in the beginning, where he can put his revenge aside and say, Krypton is my number one priority.
Until he has a chance for revenge on the person that destroyed Krypton. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like,
right.
He was so soft in the beginning. So, and then all of a sudden, and again, you know, that question we asked earlier. So you're having these visions, and then Zod shows up, and then your son shows up and says, Earth's missing. What at that point tells you to connect those dots? Wait, Earth's missing? They're in the Phantom Zone? Like, that's a pretty intuitive leap. Let me go to where Earth should have been. Oh, look, it just reappeared. Oh, let me go into the Phantom Zone. Like, how did he... I don't know. I mean, did he...
There must be more to this Jekyll spirit, I think, than has been shown.
I mean, I suppose it's possible that he was like flew there to where Earth was, saw the small Earth, saw it as it, you know, reappeared and began growing, kind of scanned the planet or her. I mean, wouldn't there still be like news reports and stuff like talking about being in the Phantom Zone? Like, I don't know. And so then he connected those dots. I don't know. I wonder if Bendis will explain it. Because here's the thing, right? We talk about Bendis giving deconstructed storytelling and story beats. And then all of a sudden we actually have an issue where we're like, wait, we're missing stuff. Usually that's not the case with Bendis at all. So, again,
so much to take in.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, last thing I'll say about the issue is, you know, I've talked specifically about a few of the panels with Art. You know, the scene with Superman feeling the anger, the scene where his parents show up is beautiful. Rogel Czar smashing in is awesome. But just like overall from top to bottom, Yvonne Reese, man, absolutely incredible. So much detail, so much emotion. The scenes of New Krypton are amazing. Yeah, it's, he's quickly climbing the charts to be, to like my top three favorite Superman artists of all time, man. I mean, this is incredible work. Wow.
I was actually thinking the same thing, coming up as one of my favorite Superman artists.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a fan of him, but this is just next level, man.
Yeah.
And of course,
I mean, yeah, just, I'm looking at just like the panels of the Earth growing around them right now. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that, you know?
Yeah.
So and how they kind of narrow down and he shows so much emotion in all the faces even then.
Yeah, and just the level of detail, and you know, we got to give credit to his inkers as well for you know, for their rendering and their, you know, line work and line weights and such, for making his art really pop off the page. And then you know, Alex Sinclair's been working on the Bendis Superman books since they've started, since Bendis started with Man of Steel, and throughout all the different artists that we've seen with Man of Steel, and then it's pretty much been Yvonne Reese on Superman. I love that it's been Alex Sinclair the whole time. He's using almost a very traditional primary color palette. Maybe they're just a little muted from as bright as they could be, but it does tend to be a pretty bright book most of the time. When they're in the Phantom Zone, it's a little darker, but it suits the story that's being told. It suits kind of the hope and the positivity of who Superman is. And it's also adding this consistency to the art that regardless of who the penciler is, there's this, this throughput of, kind of continuity within the art because Alex Sinclair has done the colors for, you know, no matter which artist it was on Man of Steel, no matter what artist it is on Superman, we've got Alex Sinclair doing the colors. And I spoke to Alex at New York Comic Con, and he's going to be coming on the show probably sometime in December. So we'll definitely be talking to him about not only what he does and his process and, you know, how he got into coloring and the change from traditional to digital, all that stuff. But we'll specifically be talking about his choices on the Superman books and adding that consistency to the art. So something to look forward to next month. Really, Alex is a great guy. Always loves to educate people on coloring and what it is and what it isn't. I think coloring along with inking is one of those jobs in comics that people don't really fully understand. It's not just breaking out the Crayolas or Photoshop. There's a lot more to it than that. All right. Anything else you want to say about issue 5?
I think we covered enough.
Awesome.
So, do I get on to the action theory?
Yeah. So there's a listener named Jack Rocha that's reached out to me on Twitter for a few times, and he's talked about who Red Cloud might be. And his theory is that Red Cloud is the new 52 Lois that we saw disappear or get killed or however you want to put it at the end of the first issue of the Superman theory or not theory, but the new 52 Superwoman title. She died at the end of that issue and she got her powers, her and Lana Lang, both the new 52 versions got their powers at the end of the new 52 Superman run when that character basically exploded. And at that point is when the pre-Flashpoint Superman, the post-crisis pre-Flashpoint Superman made himself known and kind of took over because he had been living in the new 52 universe, but in hiding, in disguise, was helping out here and there. And we saw that in Dan Jurgens' Lois and Clark series. And then in the Dan Jurgens Action Comics, we had the, I can't remember what the name of it was, the name of the arc, but it was the one with Mixia's Piddalick and basically...
Reborn.
Yeah, Superman Reborn, that's right, where basically some of the new 52 Superman's memories and history and basically life got merged with the pre-Flashpoint Superman to kind of clean up the continuity a little bit. So Jack first sent me the message back in August saying that what if this Lois is the new 52 Lois and Red Cloud. Being Superwoman would explain the Red Cloud powers, and her anger can be explained by the fact that she was left for dead. And then later, at the beginning of November, he said he's doubling down on his new 52 Lois Lane is Red Cloud theory. He wasn't satisfied with her answers on John. You know, why she didn't see Clark as soon as she got back, and most importantly, Lex. Lex knows everything that Lois told Superman. He knows about John, Superwoman, Jor-El. Lex was there to coach her. And Clark knows heartbeats. Who else would could fake being Lois unless it was a Lois from a different Earth? So he said he went back and read the Red Cloud clue page that DC Nation released. And the last line on Lois is this, quote, "What better way to strike at Superman's heart than by enlisting a villain who looks just like his wife?" So... super interesting theory. I almost want this to be true because then it explains away why Lois would want them to change the nature of their relationship, right?
I don't know if it would explain why join a mob though.
Well, it might be that she thoroughly wants to destroy Superman, and what better way to weaken him, you know, and we see this happen a lot with Batman foes, you know, whenever there's like a big new Batman foe, like Hush, the Hush storyline comes to mind, the Batman Eternal storyline comes to mind as well, where this new... you know, big bad will show up and they'll recruit all these other villains from the rogues gallery of whatever particular hero. And they, in order to weaken the hero, cause they don't want to go directly at them. Like when they're at full strength, they start tearing away bits and pieces of them. Right. So, you know, we saw it in Daredevil, Born Again with what the Kingpin does to Daredevil. So it could be that Red Cloud's like, okay, I'm going to start by creating this group, this cabal, that's going to operate right under Superman's nose in Metropolis and start, you know, inserting itself and infiltrating like the entire infrastructure and underground of the city. So when I'm ready, I can trigger like this huge, like meltdown or disaster or whatever in Metropolis that will Superman will be overwhelmed and it will weaken him. And then at that point, it'll be time to strike. I mean, that's if we want to buy Jack's theory here. He goes on to say, "I also would like to hear who you think Red Cloud could be. Robinson Good is the current obvious answer. The one Bendis wants us to believe is Red Cloud, but it's never the obvious answer. Melody Moore, we haven't heard from in a long time. And Trish is obsessed with Clark, but to me, that seems the most unlikely." So my thought on Red Cloud was that perhaps she was somebody brand new, somebody we haven't even gotten to know yet or haven't necessarily seen a... kind of an alter ego to yet. You know, we haven't seen her normal human form, for lack of a better word. That was kind of the impression that I was operating under, is that she was new. I didn't necessarily think that she was anybody that we see in the pages, but I have to admit that the Lois theory, the new, that she's the new 52 Lois, that's got a lot of weight to it. And what that would mean also is that the pre-Flashpoint Lois is still out there in space with John and Jor-El. And again, and maybe I'm just buying into this theory a lot because I want what happened in the last issue of Action Comics not to be the real Lois. But it does make a lot of sense. But I'd say, like, if I had to put a percentage on it, I'm probably only like 60% that Jack's right. I'll be happy to be proven wrong, because again, it'll make sense and it'll preserve my, you know, ideal of what Lois and Clark's relationship is. But I think, you know, obviously Robin Good is the obvious answer, but I almost think Lois would be too easy of an answer. I think Bendis is going to end up having to be more complicated than that. But for whatever reason, I'm not like, I really want to know who Rogel Czar is. And perhaps this goes back to the fact that Bendis has integrated him into the origin, the earliest stories of Superman, being that, you know, he's making him partially at least responsible for the destruction of Krypton. And maybe that's why I want the answers there. Because the mystery of who Red Cloud is doesn't really bother me, whereas the mystery of Rogel Czar is something that I actively want to know. I'm willing to wait for the Red Cloud. I'm getting a little antsy about who Rogel Czar is.
I'm almost reversed. I'm kind of more interested in Red Cloud. She just seems like a more unique villain to me, I guess. So I'm just waiting on and it's almost... It's almost more exciting to have an unmasking rather than a, you know, deep dive into history. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you as far as, like, if you just put the characters side by side, I think Red Cloud is a more interesting character because she has more layers and depth to her. It's one of the complaints I've had about Rogel Czar, and another one of the reasons I've wanted to know his history and his backstory, because right from the start, Rogel Czar seemed somewhat of a mustache-twirling villain for me. And part of that is because we don't have the layers of, okay, what is his motivation? Why is he doing what he's doing? Because then you can start to relate to them and they become, you know, more fleshed out, interesting and complex characters. Whereas Rogel Czar to this point has just been like, oh, I want to kill Kryptonian, you know, single-minded, two-dimensional. Right. And there hasn't been a lot there. So... yeah, I agree that Red Cloud seems to be the more interesting of the two. But again, maybe I'm hoping to have Rogel Czar's, you know, answers to my Rogel Czar questions, because it may redeem him character wise for me.
Yeah.
It may make him a more interesting character. Yeah. So, but I don't know. Thanks for the, I should say thanks for the thoughts, Jack, and the theories. Keep sending them in, listeners. We always love to hear from you guys. And, I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see, Jack. I'm on board with you about 60%. It does seem a little too convenient for me at this point. It almost would, if Bendis were to do that, make Red Cloud the new 52 Lois, it almost seems like he would have had her come back and not do something like, hey, let's change the nature of our relationship, but be more loving and want to get closer to Superman than ever. I mean, I suppose she's worried about being discovered, but that would make it more impactful, right? Like if Clark thought that their marriage was stronger than ever and they were closer than ever and more intimate than ever, and then all of a sudden she's revealed, she does the heel turn. So I don't know. Yeah, I'll say I'm about 60% convinced. So we'll see. What about you? Could you you put a percentage on your thoughts on that theory?
I'll give you 20%, Jack. I don't know if I buy going completely evil just from dying, but I also kind of don't think that Bendis would want to integrate other timelines, and, you know, yeah, it might be a little too confusing for new readers that he seems to be aiming for.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't think that the story, although I thought it was great, the story that Phil Jimenez told in Superwoman, I don't think a lot of people read it. I don't think the sales were real great on that book. So I don't know that a lot of people know about the whole Lana and Lex Luthor storyline that was going on there, and you know, what happened to Lois in the first issue. And then what's Lex Luthor's sister's name?
Lena,
yeah. Her part in it and all that. Cause it got pretty crazy, and it was also a really dense book. You know, I had Phil on the podcast at some point. We talked about that series. We talked about how dense it was, and he had a story that he was going to tell, and he had a certain number of issues. And then, the timeline at DC got changed and he had to condense everything. And so it made for a really dense read already. And I think there was a lot of big ideas he wanted to explore. And again, I just don't think that unfortunately the sales on that book were really good. I think a lot of people were turned off about the whole, it got kind of marketed as Lois Lane with superpowers, and they, you know, completely flipped the script in the first issue. And I think it pissed a lot of people off, honestly. And so I think even the people that, a lot of people that were picking it up or picked up the first issue jumped ship after that first issue. So that's another reason.
I gotta admit, I only read one issue. I wasn't mad, but it was also kind of like, I like Lana, but I didn't like her in that position. And the, if I'm being honest, the suit, like, kind of gave me a headache, with all the bright red going on.
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed because, you know, again, Lois is one of my favorite characters for the reasons I've talked about before. And mm-hmm. one of my favorite issues, or probably my favorite issue of All-Star Superman, is when he gives Lois the powers. And I bought my wife that Superwoman action figure, that Super Lois action figure. and it sits here in my studio. So I was super excited for it. And then to have her, you know, unceremoniously dumped it was just kind of, I kept reading it because I'm, you know, a fan of Phil, and I thought it was good. It just wasn't what I wanted it to be. You know, I wanted Superwoman.
Yeah, I'm sure it was good. It was just kind of like, well, this wasn't what I was ready to invest in, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, do you have a theory? Is there somebody else that you'll throw your weight behind at more than 20% of who Red Cloud might be?
I still think Robinson good. Only, I know she's probably the front runner, but I think that the scene where Red Cloud seemingly attacked the woman she was talking to was supposed to throw you off. And maybe it didn't as much as it should, but I would say front runner is Robinson good. Second would be Melody Moore, only because we haven't really seen much from her and she could be in the background doing all these attacks.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, Red Cloud's ability, you know, the red and the way her ability work, her powers work is a little bit like fire, and, you know, Melody Moore is, you know,
right,
deputy fire chief. Yeah. So
most
I could see that. And I really could see it being Robinson good as well, as much as you don't expect it to be the obvious person. So then if no one expects it to be the obvious person, then does she stop becoming the obvious person? And then you say, oh, I didn't see that coming because I didn't think it would be so obvious. So anyway, Jack did send me another message, actually just yesterday, saying that when he read Superman 5, he got scared for his theory because Superman showed up on that first page. Obviously, we know that was a dream from Zod, but
right.
He says, if anything, a low Superman appearance says, don't forget about her. This could be her, but regardless, according to the solicits, we should find out in Action Comics 1005. The solicits for that, I think that's the issue that comes out in January or maybe December. But it says, yeah, the identity of Red Cloud will be revealed. So I guess we'll find out just who's right. And again, my most prevalent theory, my overriding theory, is it's going to be somebody that we haven't even seen yet. But I guess we'll wait and see which one of us turns out to be right.
Right.
All right. Anything else we want to add about Superman 5 or Red Cloud?
No, not right now. Just that I like them both.
Yeah, definitely. And be sure to stay tuned, listeners, for that Alex Sinclair interview that's should be coming up next month. And still have my feelers out trying to get Brian Michael Bendis to come on the show. As you can imagine, he's super busy with all the Wonder Comics imprint and titles coming out at DC in the first of the new year. So when he has time, we're hoping to have him on still. So as always, thanks for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms as well as at lrmonline.com. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, thanks for joining, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.